Hey, wait till Timothy Green Beckley tells us about the priest in Spain. What a story that is about evil forces. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Timothy, before we get into some of these other areas, I'll let you finish up about your theory about Planet X.
Oh, anyway, so Commander Alvin Moore there, he believed that there were these invisible islands orbiting our planet, and that some of these evil beings were coming from these islands. But he also said that he believed that they had bases even closer, that they had them in undersea hangars and in the hollow of mountains, which seems perhaps there is some validity to that, because, Dulce, New Mexico, of course, all these strange phenomena kind of that we've been talking about, including the mutilation and supposedly alien beings having laboratories with hybrids and all that underneath the in tunnels underneath the earth, seem to kind of establish or back up Moore's idea. You know, like I say, he was not a crackpot, even though a lot of people perceive him to be. He actually had held the patents on something like 32 devices. He was very intelligent. He spoke before Congress a couple of times, and he was, venerated by his peers. So, people who kind of look into it and say, "Oh, this guy's very speculative. He's got some wild theories, and they don't seem to hold water." Well, they haven't really, looked at this from a wide point of view. You know, that's why I say you can't go into this with blinders on. And one of the things that kind of enables me to see this, from all angles, is the longevity factor. I've been doing this since the 1960s. I started out, I had my first of three sightings at the age of 10, and then I started putting out a little newsletter when I was about 14 or 15 years old.
You know, we had good for you.
Mimeograph machines
in school,
days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. In school, we had Ditto. We were Ditto machines, which ran like on a purple alcohol
with a handle. Face. Didn't they have a handle?
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Mine was a Gestetner mimeograph machine where you threw the ink in and it made a mess. I mean,
and it smelled. I remember that inky smell.
Yeah. My mother. Well, I still have. If the house still exists somewhere, I haven't been in years. But my mother exiled me to the back porch to print the newsletter. Because the ink, there's still probably fingerprints on that back porch there somewhere. And I had to be dedicated, because in wintertime I'd sit out on that back porch that was not heated and a coat and a hat and crank away at the machine. And in those days, we didn't have collators, or you had to just stack the pages up and go from one to the other. And it started out to being just like a few pages. It ended up being 40 pages. And we had a circulation of 1,500.
That's amazing.
We were as big as APRO at one point. Until one day Jim Moseley came along, who had Saucer News, and he said, "Tim, how would you like to have a job, a real paid job in publishing? Let me take over your subscriptions," because it's got quite a bit to do, So Jim hired me. And I came to Manhattan, and I worked for his magazine till it folded. And then I went on to edit 30 different other pulp publications, most of which didn't last more than a couple of issues, but it was quite an experience. And, of course, I edited UFO Universe magazine for 11 years, and still do the Conspiracy Journal, both an online edition and through the mail. We put out a catalog and a printed, edition, which anybody can get. All they have to do is go to conspiracyjournal.com and sign up, and it doesn't cost anything. Although, if you spring for a book, that sure in the heck would keep me, in fried chicken for Colonel Sanders fried chicken for a while.
Sure would.
Yeah, anything is helpful these days.
Tim, so at what point, though, in your young life did you begin to shift a little bit, thinking that these were a little more demonic? They weren't as friendly as all of us wanted them to be.
Okay, well, now, there was someone in my family, and I won't say who it is, because some of the members of that particular clan are still around. But there was a sighting across the street from where they lived. And this is, like I say, someone in the family. UFO sighting was seen, I think, hovering over you know, like a billboard in a kind of a wooded area off the road. And well, it was my brother-in-law, actually, I think I can say that, went out and looked at the object for a while, and I know he described it kind of as being dazzling. Now, there were other things that started to happen just after that. There was sounds or voices coming from a covered but an abandoned well in the field behind the house. There were objects moving around in the basement, and sounds of people kind of talking, chattering, but you couldn't make it out what it was that they were saying. And there were objects mysteriously disappearing and reappearing in the household. And this is something that happens all the time. In fact, I remember I had a jewelry salesman came to me one time. He was an Orthodox Jew, and he took the diamonds on approval, right? And he was in Israel, and he was driving through a cloud, a mist or a cloud, I guess a smoggy road, foggy road at night,
Nothing that you'd see in the Bermuda Triangle, not one of those things.
Yeah, or other people have described this. In fact, there are some people who have wandered into such a cloud and come out hundreds of miles away and not be, or they've wandered into the cloud.
And never came out.
Well, that's a possibility too, yes. Or they wandered into the cloud and maybe into another dimension and saw things that that were not there when they drove the same road later on. Anyway, apparently a very valuable diamond that had been given to this gentleman on approval disappeared. Was worried, to say the least, because he was, of course, responsible, so it was a financial burden. But also, I think the people or whoever that he got these diamonds from, we're not going to take an excuse of driving through a fog.
That's what they'll say.
If you don't have that kind of background. Anyway, so he came to me, and he wanted. He said, "What do I do?" And I thought back to this the experience of these my family members, right? I remember that someone in the family had told me that they had lost their wedding ring just around the same time.
Okay.
And the wedding ring showed up several days later in the bread basket, bread box, whatever you call it, right? Very strange. And this happened on a number of occasions and seems to be a repeated part of this phenomenon. In fact, Uri Geller, who, of course, is very well known as a psychic, started his illustrious career, and I know Uri pretty well, especially when he lived here in New York. We met every year so often, and I saw him do some pretty remarkable things that I don't believe were a trickery. In fact, the amazing Randy, who I shared an office with, actually.
Oh, you did?
I did, yeah. Most people don't realize it. I shared an office with the amazing Randy. I was on his radio show. He did have an all-night radio show back in the 60s, and he was not that skeptical. He wasn't a believer, but he didn't go after the jugular. I guess he would never get anybody to go on his program.
By the way, the Great Buck Howard, was made about him, I think.
Is that right?
With John Malkovich.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, Randy wanted me to manage him, and I'm not much into, this is kind of not my thing, And magicians, I go for the real stuff, So I saw Uri do some things that I can't explain. I had a key on the other side of the room while he was, stroking somebody else's key, and it was bending. My key was bending on the other side of the room. I had to kind of straighten it out in order to open my apartment door after that, and he never touched this thing. Now, on a previous edition of the program, Coast here, I told about what happened up at Muhammad Ali's training camp. So I won't repeat
that.
I can listen to it on the stream there. I just began to realize that, okay, so this thing with the diamond, I told the fellow, I said, if things go according to what have, what's taken place in the past, it will show up eventually somewhere when you least expect it. And sure enough, it did. I did get a telephone call from the gentleman a month or two later and said that it appeared the the diamond showed up in another jewelry case or jewelry bag that he was carrying. So he was very relieved over that. So they're playing tricks with us, George. These entities, a lot of them are tricksters. They tell you one thing, but don't take it for gospel. And of course, that's why a lot of people think that they're demons, because isn't supposedly Satan and his minions supposed to lie to you? So I don't know. I mean, this is one of the reasons that people think that they are demonic. But I noticed that quite a few patterns.
Oh, by the way, it was Kreskin, not the Amazing Randy. It was Kreskin that movie was based on.
Oh, well, I know Chris Kreskin too. I met him one time backstage at What's My Line,
and you go way back.
Yes. And he told me. I remember. He was kind of a fence setter on this. He'd always say it was mentalism, but he'd do some things that seemed to be a little bit out of the ordinary, but he never professed to be, a psychic or an occultist or anything. But he did say, when you get home, see if you notice anything, like strange or different. Okay, he could have planted that thought in my mind. You know, I was thinking about this just the other day, because if somebody tells you to look for something strange, maybe even the least little thing might seem strange. Anyway, when I got back to my office, I happened to look at my watch, and it was an hour and a half ahead of what it's was supposed to be, and he didn't touch the watch. Maybe my watch was just inaccurate, or maybe he was planting that thought in my mind. That's kind of what I figured, but that was the Amazing Kreskin, and he does what he does, but it's not psychic. Anyway, I found out that there seemed to be a series of patterns here with the people who had these UFO encounters. Now, we're not just talking about lights in the sky, although sometimes it could start with this. And, usually the witnesses will not talk about this stuff unless you prompt them. And I've had many occasions where I remember one case in the town of Athens, Ohio. I had gone there to investigate object that apparently had landed in a cornfield behind someone's house. Now, we're not talking about acreages. In fact, I kind of got surprised when I imagined this, sprawling field. No, I was a farmer, and he had a little patch of corn behind the house. But apparently his grandson, 13, 14 years old, has seen this strange light in the sky, and it came down over the cornfield. Right? He ran inside and told his grandfather, came out, didn't see anything. But next day, the corn was all trampled. And apparently, and this would have been the case for Dr. Hynek and his crew to investigate, because it was a landing a trace case, And anyway, I went out there a couple of weeks later. I had some business kind of in Ohio anyway, so it wasn't like I raced out there to see a landing in a field. And he claimed the marking was still there, and you couldn't really tell. But I figured, well, this is as far as I could go with this particular incident, but let me canvass the neighborhood. And we're talking about very, very rural. So I go, and I usually try to find people in the driveway instead of knocking on their door. Anyway, I saw some woman kind of like, sweeping her back porch, and I approached her, and I said, did you hear about the incident up the road a ways where this object's supposed to land? And she said, yeah. I said, well, did you see anything strange? She said, no, but Bigfoot has been around the house again. I said, Bigfoot has been around the house again? She says, yeah, every time it rains or it gets damp or something, she hears him in back of the house, and sometimes he knocks or rubs up against the
side of the house.
Yeah, on the side of the house or the air conditioner in the back, right? And, there's usually a pretty muddy back there. So she said, well, I've seen the footprints of this, creature. And she didn't relate, she didn't tie it in with the UFO. But, George, we know where there are UFOs, there are a lot of strange things.
Absolutely.
Happening in the neighborhood. Okay, John Keel referred to them as window areas, and that indeed they are. Okay, so she also told me, she said, see that hill or mountain or whatever it was off in the distance, about a quarter mile away? She said, I've seen cigar-shaped objects over that. I said, you have? She said, oh, yeah, like I'm on, such and such Tuesday night or Wednesday night or something at 8 o'clock. I said, oh, that's interesting. Why do you figure that is? And she didn't really have any explanation. So I talked to her for a few minutes, seemed to have gotten, you know, as far as I could get, and I wandered down the road again. And there was another lady, and I went up to the porch, and she wouldn't come out behind the screen door, but she kept me there for 2 hours. She said, I can't talk to you, but then she proceeded to talk, because I guess, who else do you talk about this? You know, in fact, you know, George, one thing that I found out, that when we were in Hampton Beach, you know, the one guy who's walking down the road, who's the neighbor of the next guy, neither one of them have talked about the subject, because I guess they're embarrassed.
They're embarrassed, sure.
To bring it up, to their neighbor, not realizing that their neighbor has had the same sort of experience that they have had.
And probably okay, others so, there, too.
Yeah. So getting back to this gal, all right, she said, there's something strange going on here. And I said, well, what's going on strange? And she said, well, my hot water heater, I think it was, or gas tank or something to that effect, seems to be rapping out messages. All right. Well, that's a pretty hard one to swallow. But, you know, okay, but not really when you think about
Morse
it.
Morse code with a washing machine,
yes,
huh?
Well, okay, but how did the how did spiritualism start, if you remember? It was the Fox sisters up near Albany, New York,
mm-hmm.
and they heard the rappings on the wall and under the bed, and they managed to actually work out a code. You know, so many raps for yes, so many raps for no, and the entity or the spirit claiming to be representing the Knox claimed that they were murdered. They were a traveling salesman, and they were murdered in the house and planted under the floorboards in the basement somewhere. Well, they never did find they did find, I think, some bones under the sidewalk or something, but they found traces of what seemed to be some kind of locked metal box or something that might have had some coins in it. So that was the beginning of spiritualism, and that was just about the same. Knockings and rappings have taken place in the seance rooms and in haunted houses and all for hundreds of years. And I do believe that the entities on board UFOs and what takes place in the haunted house or the seance room are pretty closely related.
Why do you think that these entities aren't very nice?
Well, some of them may be. In fact, before I came on the air, Sean Castile, who is the author of this book, and much more of a devout religious person than I am. I can't say that I'm an atheist, but I'm just not into, you know, the trappings of organized
I understand.
Religion. But Sean is. Okay, so we've done a book on angels called Angels of the Lord, where we bring in some of the positive side of this, because it's not, I don't want people to go away thinking, well, it's all negative. The only problem is if you're standing in a field, right, and there's an object up ahead and a door opens and somebody comes out, do you flip a coin? I mean, how do you know for sure who is on board? Do you take a chance or do you run in the night? What would you do, George?
I would take a chance.
I think I would, too.
Yep.
And I guess most of your listeners
would. They would, too. We're gutsy people.
Huh?
We're gutsy
yes.
people here.
Yeah, yes, indeed. But so, I, in fact, now, I think I read in the paper the other day, or somebody told me this, there was a police officer, a sheriff's deputy in Texas, and he had been bitten by a poisonous snake. And his hand was all kind of swollen and bandaged. I guess he had been to the hospital, you know. And then he got hit by a beam of light from a UFO.
Like Travis Walton. Same kind of thing.
Well, same type of thing, though. I don't think, though, that Travis was healed of anything. There have been cases, some phenomenal cases, actually, of people actually being healed by UFOs. This one of the sheriff's deputy. There was a case of another woman that I met years ago. Her name was Helen. And she claimed that she had had a cancer, and she had some UFO encounter. And the next time that she had gone to the hospital, the doctors, there was full remission. Also, Carl Higdon, and this is one of my favorite abductions.
Hold on right there. We'll come right back to that. And you definitely have to tell us about the priest in Spain when we come back, too. Well, next hour, we'll take your stories with Timothy Green Beckley and with me on Coast to Coast AM. Perhaps some of these strange things have happened to you as well. And we'll come back with him and chat some more on Coast to Coast AM. Timothy, let's let you finish the story about this fellow named Charles, and then let's get into this Spanish priest story.
Where were we?
You were talking about somebody named Charles, but I don't know who he is.
I lost my train of thought.
Okay. All right, well, let's get into the Spanish priest.
Okay.
He believes that there's a struggle with evil forces. Tell me about this guy.
Well, okay, his name is Salvador Freixedo. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. There's a chapter in the Round Trip to Hell on a Flying Saucer that was contributed by Scott Corrales, who is probably the top researcher in the Hispanic community. He translates all the clippings from South America and from Spain and so forth. Very astute researcher, very great writer, and we have worked together in the past. He was a regular contributor to UFO Universe and other publications that I've done. Anyway, this particular priest, and he was he's now a defrocked Jesuit priest, by the way.
Still alive, still alive, right?
Oh, he's still alive, yes, and I still believe active in the field. Unfortunately, outside of an obscure book, which is out of print now, that was originally published by Ron Bond's Illuminate Press. Of course, Ron is no longer with us. And a book is very hard to get. Most of his literature, the books he's written, are only available in Spanish. And I think he's written probably about a dozen volumes, so he would be one of the leading researchers. But he believes that UFOs, or most of them at least, are evil forces. And he suggests that the beings consider us breeding animals and are here exploiting us for our blood. I guess he ties this in with a lot of the ancient Mayan rituals.
What do they do with the blood?
Well, according to David Icke, they use it. It keeps them balanced in our surroundings, in our physical world. It brings up their energy, much like it would a vampire. In fact, Salvador got thrown out of Mexico, in fact, for inciting a panic, because apparently he investigated a number of deaths that had occurred near Mexico City, in which the blood had actually been extracted from the victims in vampiric fashion. But this guy was an all-around, you know, researcher and really, really zoned in on this. According to Scott supplied us with, Salvador had witnessed phantom animals up close, had photographed the carcasses of freshly mutilated heads of cattle, and had climbed the heights of mountains in search of alien contact, only to be driven back by sonic booms. Now, Salvador believes that these beings are not extraterrestrial, that they are probably earthbound. I think from what I can gather from reading his material, kind of like the Greek gods. You know, they hide out on the Mount Olympus or perhaps underground in this case, and they are able to mingle with humans, disguising themselves perhaps, or contacting individuals who are like their earthly representatives. He looks at a lot of religious leaders and spiritual leaders and so forth, and claims that these beings would be in touch with them. So there are some positive ones as well as the negative ones, but he has spent his entire life investigating these very negative and demonic forces that he claims that are all around us. So he really sees the world in a very dark a cloud. But, you know, the concept that they are here is not really such a strange one, and there may be some truth to that. Because if they are able to shapeshift, they can take on human appearances. I remember, George, one time many years ago, I was lecturing at a college, I think it was in Michigan. And after the...
tell me the city, I'll tell you the college.
I couldn't remember.
Ann Arbor?
To be honest with you. No, that was near where, of course, the marsh gas was seen.
Near Dexter. How about Michigan
Dexter,
State?
There you go. And you know, I recently ran into somebody, and they said, "Oh, I live in Dexter, but you wouldn't know where that was." And I said, "Of course I do." And in fact, I have traveled so much that people can name the most obscure place, and I can tell them what it's between.
That's fantastic.
So anyway, there was, you know, this incident apparently where he was driving at night in an isolated area, which is, you know, something that often happens,
sure,
like Betty and Barney Hill, I guess. And he saw this light on the side of the road. At first, he thought it was some sort of traffic accident or somebody disabled, so he slowed down. Well, what he saw really puzzled and, I guess, scared him to a great extent. He saw a craft on the landing gear, you know, like tripod landing gear,
sure,
H-shaped craft. And coming out of the craft were several men and a woman, and they got into earthly automobiles, and they drove off. Well, now he figured, geez, maybe I shouldn't be seen here, because this is something that I can't explain, and it doesn't look right. So he tried to push it out of his mind, but of course he couldn't, because what the heck does this mean? I mean, here's an educated fellow, you know, and he's taught, you know, this can't possibly happen. It doesn't exist. UFOs are a figment of the imagination. But this isn't a UFO. This is a craft with landing gear. This is as close to a spaceship, I guess, as you're going to get. Anyway, a couple of days later, the gentleman, this professor, teacher, is in the local supermarket. He's about ready to go through the checkout line when he sees two or three individuals ahead of him in the checkout line, a man, and at first he says, "Well, I know this person, but I can't think of where." And then it dawns on him that this is one of the guys that he sees getting out of this craft. The man was dressed in a black suit, but I wouldn't consider him a man in black. It was just, he looked totally human. I mean, there wasn't anything strange about him at
right.
all. I mean, he had earthly features and the whole bit, and he didn't seem to be acting, you know, robotic or anything, you know, that would put him in the classification of a MIB. So this fellow says, "Well, maybe I ought to take the chance and go up to him and talk with him." So he tries to rush through a line, and hopefully he didn't have, you know, his groceries for the week. But he, you know, sees the guy go out the front door of the supermarket and headed into the parking lot. He makes a right turn and you know, he follows him out into the parking lot, and the guy vanishes right in front of him. He just isn't there. So what happened to him? You know, these beings that are living here amongst us, they seem to have the ability to not only change shape, to take on human appearance, but they have the ability to vanish right in front of our eyes. And this is something that's happened over and over and over again, where it just seems to be reoccurring. There's something just so unusual about it's like they're popping in from another dimension. And the same thing with
possible.
Well, it is. You know, now, do they know that they're popping in from another dimension? Do they have control over it? Or is it just something that happens at random, like you mentioned the Bermuda Triangle, where we might go in and disappear for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there have been some planes. Well, the Philadelphia Experiment, of course, where people disappeared, you know, were teleported apparently and disappeared for a short while and then reemerged back in this space and time. So I don't know. You know, there's something puzzling there. But we have a lot of cases now where these people seem to be living right here amongst us, taking on human form.
Fascinating. It really is. So your bottom line guess here on just what's going on would be what?
Well, bottom line guess, a lot of different things. And like I said, I don't know as if you can ever really explain it. It does seem to be that there are...
Whatever it is, you think it's real?
Well, it's not a hallucination.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying physical, I'm saying real. Whatever it is, it's actually happening.
Oh, yes. There's no doubt about that in my mind whatsoever. I mean, we are interacting with some other form of intelligence, or maybe more than one form. And I think that's why when you look for an explanation, you're not likely to find one, because if you compare two different cases, you might have two different forms of intelligence.
Sure.
Maybe they're all coming in. You know, it could be that the Earth is like a candy land, or we could be living in some sort of matrix.
Or a prison.
Maybe we're just a computer-generated product of somebody's intelligence. There's a lot of things, and that's one thing that I enjoy about the subject. It opens your mind up to all sorts of things. And looking at the contactee stories, people say, "Oh, it was nonsense; they made it up." But I think these early contactee stories, George Van Tassel, George Adamski, and
they were far out. They were far out stories.
Far out, but I do believe that they were responsible for perhaps our early attempts at a space program. I mean, they gave us, there was some inspiration there. I could still look at those stories today and say, all right, maybe they didn't go to the moon or Howard Menger.
Or Venus.
Or Venus or Saturn or something like that. But they inspired, I believe, a lot of people. And I believe that they were an inspiration for us going into space. And there's no inspiration now.
What do you think government, Tim, if you believe that this is actually happening in some form or fashion, what do you think government believes?
Well, there's a chapter in the book. You've had Nick Redford on the show, and I guess he's talked about this. The Navy seems to have more interest in UFOs than the Air Force or any other branches of the military. There's been any number of there have been several contacts made by naval officials with some form of extraterrestrials or aliens or whatever you want to call it. And there was even a group in the government who believed that these beings were demonic. But they were seeing it more from a fundamentalist, religious point of view, where, like I say, to me, demons are kind of like spirits that you can conjure up. I don't see any religious affiliation necessarily with it. Also, too, how do you go on TV at a press conference? Stephen Bissett and all that, they talk about disclosure, and I go along with you. There's never going to be any disclosure. The only way that there will be disclosure is if whoever they are decide that they want to let us know. And they don't seem they seem to be interested in having us notice them, to talk them up. I'm sure they love to listen to Coast, if that's possible.
Maybe.
Maybe, yes. But I don't think the government could ever explain this, because what is there to explain? How do you explain this? I can't explain it. You can't explain it. How is the president or anybody else in the cabinet or a military, a general or something, going to explain this? First of all, they don't have the background for this. I don't. Of course, we know that Jimmy Carter had a UFO sighting, and
Reagan may have had one.
Oh, Reagan had several. In fact, this probably isn't that well known. But I one time had a conversation with Steve Allen. I used to do a lot of
the comedian.
I talk to almost everybody, because, in fact, I have a book out called UFOs Among the Stars, where I interviewed a lot of these celebrities. I was a stringer for the tabloids, like the Inquirer and the Globe and so forth. And I always managed to throw in a UFO and a paranormal question, right? Because that's what interested me. So if you got somebody cornered for a half an hour and you want to know about rags to riches or some other scandalous part of their career, you might as well find out what you're interested in, too. And a lot of the celebrities, of course, had UFO and paranormal experiences. So, I quizzed a lot of them and got a lot of really fascinating stories. Steve Allen told me that he was having a party one night, and Ronald and Nancy Reagan came in, and they had been followed by a UFO along the coast there in California. So there are there are people who would back this up. Of course, Steve and his wife have since passed on, But, you know, people always said, oh, he told the story, but they could never find the the witness to it. Well, Steve Allen was the witness. It was his party that the Reagans came into very excited. And apparently, I think he had several sightings, perhaps. And, of course, the Clintons had some Hillary, talked to one of the Rockefellers who had the
Lawrence,
the Lawrence Rockefeller, yeah, who had actually put together a package of material with all the evidence about hard UFOs. Of course, he saw it from a strictly nuts and bolts level here, spaceships and so forth, and tried to convince Hillary and all to take the matter seriously and maybe try to get something happening up on Capitol Hill. But, can you imagine if Dennis Kucinich, of course, told his little story about his UFO sighting and kind of was, laughed out there briefly. And I don't know if this, most people know this. George, where he had a sighting was on Shirley MacLaine's property.
That's right.
Yep. So, it's not something. I think somebody mentioned that if you come out with a pro UFO statement, you're probably going to go down 20% in popularity. And I don't know exactly why that is. It's going to take a couple of earth-shaking events by them in order to pull this out of the fire. And we need some action in the sky, so to speak. And most of what is happening now seems to be on a very low-level basis. I don't mean low-level that it's not happening all over, but it seems that the sightings are below treetop level and are personal encounters and things that I've kind of described over the last couple of hours, which people perhaps are not, a little bit prone to talk about. In fact, we found out that after a close encounter, a lot of the eyewitnesses go through a period of anxiety during which they feel unable to, cope with certain aspects of their experience. In fact, some of them even have a memory blocks, of course, where there are certain things that happen to them that they just can't remember. And some people, of course, their lives just go totally astray after they have a UFO encounter. They break up with their mate, or they lose their job, or they hit the road to meditate on top of Bell Rock in Sedona.
It's like Close Encounters of the Third Time, a kind.
Yes, it is. I was one of the editors of the official Close Encounters poster magazine when the film
back there in the 70s.
My job was to take what happened in the film and show how those incidents were related to real experiences. And I still have copies of the, I see it on sale at eBay. There was a poster magazine, and then they put it together as a big glossy kind of like a photo book. And I love that movie. That's one of the few, and I'm a, I make movies. I make low-budget horror films as Mr. Creepo. I'm not ashamed of saying that. I very seldom see a film more than once. Once I see it, it's over with. It's like reading a book. Some people can go back and say, I want to read that or see it again. But I did see Close Encounters probably about 7 or 8 times.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it is.
And I like the cameo that Hynek had. Jalen Hynek had
my goodness.
Cameo.
And you know what else I like? I like Communion. I know a lot of people say,
sure,
wasn't flashy enough. It wasn't Hollywood. But to me, that's a great film. And Christopher Walken is a great
Whitley Strieber.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got Whitley on Monday, by the way.
Oh, I know. I listened to his show, too, and all. He's a great guy. I know him. In fact, I was in a cab one night. You talk about synchronicity. And we're down in the village where he used to live. And this cab driver says, I bet you don't know who lives across the street. And I said, yeah, Whitley lives there.
Ah. Cabby loved it. Stay with us, Tip.
The cabbie.
Top of the hour, coming back with phone calls for you and stories on Coast to Coast AM.